Yeshua's actions and the actions of his disciples fell under the constant scrutiny of the religious authorities of his day, chief among whom were the Pharisees and the scribes. They saw the influence that Yeshua had over the masses and wanted to determine if Yeshua followed the Torah. After Yeshua fed the 5,000, some Pharisees and scribes came from Jerusalem to where Yeshua was ministering to the masses in the Galilee. Let's look at Mark 7, verses 1 and 2. Then the Pharisees and some of the scribes came together to him, having come from Jerusalem. Now when they saw some of his disciples eat bread with unwashed hands, they found fault. The Pharisees and the scribes immediately found fault with Yeshua's disciples and through them found fault with Yeshua. What is the criticism of the Pharisees based on? What is the custom of washing or immersing hands as it was practiced in the time of Yeshua? In order to understand the context of this passage, we need to understand more about the Pharisees and their motivations. The Pharisees practiced a strict form of Judaism that frequently separated themselves from the ordinary Jew of the time. As a result, it was nearly impossible for them to eat in the homes of Jews who were not themselves Pharisees. Now, some of the Pharisees attempted to live in a constant state of ritual purity or cleanness. Now, being clean or unclean was determined by whether or not a person came into contact with things or people that rendered them unclean. Some of these things are contact with a dead body, or touching a woman during her menstrual cycle, or coming into contact with the carcass of an unclean animal. Anything that comes into contact with the carcass of an unclean animal itself becomes unclean, and anything that a woman sits on during her menstrual cycle becomes unclean, and anyone touching such an object then becomes unclean. Now, as you can see, trying to live in a constant state of ritual purity requires a constant vigilance. Most states of uncleanness can be remedied by just simply washing and waiting until evening, although others require rituals of cleansing lasting 7 days, as detailed in Leviticus chapters 11, 12, and 15. The First Fruits of Zion, in their work, The Chronicles of Messiah, report that, for example, some Pharisees attempted to eat their meals while in a state of Levitical purity, a standard which assumed those who prepared the meals had done so in a ritually pure state. This involves treating the vessels for food with the same standards as those applied to vessels in the temple, and bathing not only before entering the temple, but whenever they returned to their homes after visiting the marketplace. Mark speaks of this when he explained the complaints of the Pharisees against Yeshua's disciples. Look at Mark 7, 3 and 4. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands in a special way, holding the tradition of the elders. When they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And there are many other things which they have received and hold, like the washing of cups, pitchers, copper vessels, and couches. Now, in other words, the Pharisees went beyond the scope of the Torah in maintaining ritual purity. The Pharisees believed that by eating in a ritually pure state, they were committing acts of devotion and worship that would elevate their souls and protect them from wicked character traits. In contrast, Yeshua was not concerned with maintaining a ritually pure state. He didn't limit himself to eating with the Pharisees and their overzealous interpretation of the Torah. He ate at the homes of Jewish tax collectors, whom many of the Pharisees regarded as something less than a Jew. Look at Luke 5, 29 through 30. Then Levi gave him a great feast in his own house, and there were a great number of tax collectors and others who sat down with them. And their scribes and the Pharisees complained against his disciples, saying, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" Yeshua was more concerned with the soul of the tax collector and the sinner than he was with applying purity laws of the temple to the common home. Let's look at Luke 5, 31 through 32. Jesus answered and said to them, "Those who are well do not need a physician, but those who are sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." Yeshua was constantly subjecting himself to situations where he would become unclean. Anyone who touches a leper becomes unclean, and Yeshua reached out and touched a leprous man to heal him. Look at Luke 5, verse 13. Then he put out his hand and touched him, saying, "I'm willing, be cleansed." Immediately the leprosy left him. Now, being in the house where there is a dead body or where someone died makes a person unclean. Yeshua entered the home of Jairus, the ruler of the synagogue of Capernaum, whose daughter had died. He touched the girl and lifted her to her feet. Mark 5, 38 through 41. Then he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and saw a tumult and those who wept and wailed loudly. When he came in, he said to them, "Why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they ridiculed him. But when he had put them all outside, he took the father and the mother of the child and those who were with him and entered where the child was laying. Then he took the child by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kumi," which translated, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." As Yeshua was on the way to Jairus' house, a woman with a discharge of blood touched him, making him unclean. However, Yeshua was not concerned over becoming unclean. He was concerned with who he had healed. Look at Mark 5, 30 through 34. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out from him, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" But his disciples said to him, "You see the multitude thronging you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see her who had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." Yeshua didn't stay in an isolated environment where he could enjoy the benefits of living in a constant state of ritual purity. He went where the people were, and he met their needs. The Pharisees and the scribes, who should have been the ones instructing the people and meeting their needs, thought they were better than the masses. The Pharisees referred to the people, that is the crowds, as being ignorant of the Torah. Look at John 7, 47 through 49. Then the Pharisees answered them, "Are you deceived? Have any of the rulers or the Pharisees believed him? But this crowd that does not know the law is accursed." When the Pharisees who came from Jerusalem to question Yeshua's observance of the Torah criticized some of Yeshua's disciples for not following their own practices of washing their hands before eating common food, Yeshua called them on their hypocrisy. Look at Mark 7, 5-7. Then the Pharisees and scribes asked him, "Why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands?" And he answered and said to them, "Well, did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, 'This people honors me with their lips, but their hearts is far from me, and in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men.'" Yeshua tells them that their acts of devotion that they thought brought them nearer to God were just empty practices. They honored God with their lips, but in their hearts, they were really honoring just themselves. Yeshua explains that their hypervigilance about trying to prepare and eat even common foods as if they were holy did not replace obeying the Torah in other more important matters. Look at Mark 7, verses 8 and 9. "For laying aside the commandment of God, you hold tradition of men, the washing of pitchers and cups, and many other such things you do. He said to them, "All too well, you reject the commandment of God, that you may keep your tradition." Yeshua is telling them that keeping this tradition does not allow them to reject the Torah in other areas. Yeshua goes on to give examples of where they used a legal argument to circumvent the commandment to honor their parents. Look at Mark 7:10 through 13. "For Moses said, 'Honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death.' But you say, 'If a man says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me is korban, that is, a gift to God,' then you no longer let him do anything for his father or his mother, making the word of God of no effect through your tradition which you have handed down. And many such things you do." Yeshua quoted Moses' instructions to take care of one's mother and father. There is another commandment that says that anything devoted to God cannot be used for any other purpose. Leviticus 27, verse 28. "Nevertheless, no devoted offering that a man may devote to the Lord of all that he has, both man and beast, or the field of his possession, shall be sold or redeemed. Every devoted offering is most holy to the Lord." Some Pharisees were devoting property and resources to God and then stating that they could not take care of their aging parents because their resources were devoted to God. They were neglecting the commandment to honor their parents in favor of an optional gift to God. Yeshua is telling them that honoring their parents is a higher commandment than the optional giving of a gift to God. Now, like the practice of artificially maintaining a state of ritual purity or treating all food as if it were holy, giving a gift to God does not automatically make one holy or protect them from wicked character traits. Conversely, eating food that is common does not cause one to exhibit wicked character traits. Yeshua addressed this directly. Look at Mark 7:14 through 15. "When he had called all the multitude to himself, he said to them, 'Hear me, everyone, and understand. There is nothing that enters a man from outside which can defile him, but the things which come out of him, those are the things that defile a man.'" Yeshua's disciples did not understand this short statement and asked him about it privately. He explained that food we take into our bodies does not affect our hearts. That is, they don't affect our character. Food is taken in by the stomach and passes out through waste. Mark 7:17 through 20. "And when he entered into a house from the crowd, his disciples questioned him about the parable. And he said to them, 'Are you also undiscerning? Do you not perceive that all that enters from the outside into the man is not able to defile him? This is because it does not enter his heart, but his belly, and goes out into the waste bowl, purging all the food.'" Physical food does not stay in the body. It passes through. It does not cause a permanent change to the heart or the character of a person. As for the food that is either clean or unclean to begin with, once it passes through the body and is eliminated, it is regarded as ritually pure and unable to pass on ritual impurity. First Fruits of Zion, in their work, The Chronicles of Messiah, explain. Legally speaking, excrement cannot be ritually unclean or transmit ritual impurity. According to the Talmud, when an animal or a person eats something ritually unclean, that object ceases to be ritually unclean when it becomes excrement. Whether the food that is eaten is clean or unclean, it will pass out of the body without affecting the heart of the person. The body purges the food by making it pass out of the body, and in the process of digesting the food, making what was once unclean then clean. Yeshua did not say that all food is clean when it enters the body. He said that it did not have a permanent consequence on a person's moral character. the things that do have a permanent effect on a person are those thoughts and actions that come from the heart. Look at Mark 7, 20 through 23. And he said, "That which comes out of the man is what defiles the man. For within, out of the heart of a man, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things pass out from inside and defile the man." After this confrontation with the hypocritical Pharisees and scribes, Yeshua retreated from the crowds and traveled outside of Israel proper to a region of Tyre and Sidon on the northern coast. Mark 7, verse 24. "And he arose from there and went to the borders of Tyre and Sidon, and he entered into a house and desired no one to know it, but he could not be hidden." While there, Yeshua has an encounter with a woman that Matthew describes as a Canaanite, Matthew 15, 22-23. "And behold, a woman of Cana coming out of these borders cried to him, saying, 'Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with a demon.' But he did not answer her a word. And his disciples came and begged him, saying, 'Send her away, for she cries after us.'" The woman asks for deliverance for her daughter, but she's not a Jew. Yeshua doesn't immediately answer her, but keeps silent, perhaps to see what his disciples will do or say. They were insulted that such a woman would even speak to Yeshua. This is very similar to their reaction when Yeshua spoke to the Samaritan woman at the well. Like the Samaritan woman, she acknowledges her understanding of the coming of the Messiah. And with the Samaritan woman, Yeshua gladly spent 2 days with the people of Samaria, teaching them about who he was. In this case, Yeshua draws the woman out and encourages her to state her case before the disciples. Matthew 15, 24-28. "But he answered and said, 'I am not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel.' Then she came and worshipped him, saying, 'Lord, help me.' But he answered and said, 'It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to dogs.' And she said, 'True, O Lord, but even the little dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from their master's table.' Then Jesus answered and said to her, 'O woman, great is your faith. So be it to you, even as you wish.' And her daughter was healed from that very hour." On the surface, we may think that Yeshua is confirming that only Jews can receive salvation. Mark states that Yeshua said that the message must go first to the Jew, but he doesn't state that he won't then go to the Gentiles. Both the Samaritans and the Canaanites were considered unclean, and no Jew would voluntarily have anything to do with them. However, the woman demonstrates her understanding that salvation comes from the Son of David. The woman's daughter is delivered by her statement of faith in Yeshua. In contrast to the Pharisees, who wouldn't even associate with their fellow Jews, Yeshua is willing to interact with and even bring deliverance to the most hated of the Gentiles. Matthew will later record Yeshua's instructions to take the good news of the kingdom of heaven to all nations and embrace them as their disciples. David describes the one who truly has clean hands. He is the one with a pure heart and true worship. Look at Psalms 24, verses 3 and 4. "Who will go up unto the hill of the Lord, or who shall stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul to vanity and has not sworn deceitfully." Yeshua corrected the vanity of the Pharisees, who thought that separating themselves even from the common things of this world was the way to true worship. Yeshua pointed out that it was the things that come out of the heart that defile or do not defile a person. I'm Dan Cathcart from Moed Ministries International. Shalom and be blessed. Thank you for listening today.
Brenda and I invite you to visit our website at moedministries.com. That's Moed, M-O-E-D, Ministries, all one word, .com. On our website, we have many free resources for Bible study, including our video archives of past teachings and our blogs. Also on our website is our bookstore, where you will find all of our study materials designed for small group and family Bible studies, along with DVDs of many of our most popular teachings. While visiting our website, be sure to sign up for our newsletter and email announcements. It is completely free, and we have exclusive content that is only available to email subscribers. The sign-up form is on our homepage. Thank you again for tuning in today. I'm Dan Cathcart. Shalom, and be blessed.